Hello, welcome to our Facebook Live press event on the lawsuit against the NCAA. My name is Mary Elizabeth Castle, and I'm the Director of Government Relations for Texas Values. Today, I'm excited to have with me the Independent Council on Women's Sports, also known as ICONS, who is the leading organization helping 16 brave female athletes sue the NCAA. Their founder, Kim Jones, is here to share with us. I am also excited to have one of the female athlete plaintiffs in the case, Katie Blankenship from Georgia. And last but definitely not least, we are excited to have our friends from the Georgia Family Policy Council, Frontline Policy, who is witnessing this groundbreaking lawsuit in their backyard. Thank you to Cole Muzio, the president of Frontline Policy, for joining us today. On March 15th, ICONS and 16 female athletes did something that would inevitably happen. They sued the NCAA for failing to protect women by allowing male swimmer Will Leah Thomas to compete in the women's division in swimming and be allowed to undress in front of women in the locker room. As we have discussed many times at Texas Values, Will Thomas is a male swimmer from Austin, Texas, who competed against boys at Lake Travis High School, but then switched his junior year to compete against girls when he was at University of Pennsylvania. After almost 24 states now have laws protecting female athletes, it is time for the NCAA to take a stand. Now we have the great news that the National Association of Intercollegiate Athletics promises to keep men out of women's sports. I would first like to hear from our friend Cole Muzio, who has front row seats to the lawsuit. Cole, what are your thoughts?
Well, thank you. I appreciate the invitation, and I really appreciate the work that Texas Values does in Texas. Obviously, without Texas staying strong, our state's going to crumble. So, or our country's going to crumble. So, really appreciate the work that y'all do. Want to thank Kim for her leadership. Thank you for what you're doing here to stand up for women. And Katie, thank you so much for your bravery and your willingness to speak out. Mary, I think you said it perfectly. The NCAA has a failure to protect women. And we saw that right here in Atlanta when Riley Gaines was swimming against Will Thomas or Leah Thomas, regardless of what you call him, he's a dude. Riley rightfully deserved to beat him because he should not have been in that competition. And that failure to protect women is based in, I mean, you're talking about colleges and universities that should be teaching people fact, that should be looking at science and reality, and instead, and with sports protecting athletes and fair competition, and instead you have these colleges and universities that are promoting fiction, promoting really a hostile, version of, someone's reality by indulging their fantasy that they are something that they're not, and telling them that they're made incorrectly, and then imposing that fictional narrative onto these girls that are trying to just participate in events that they've trained for their entire life. And so Katie and female athletes and Riley Gaines and female athletes and people like Paula Scanlon, them speaking up and being willing to speak for truth is really important. And so this happened right here at Georgia Tech in Atlanta, where Leah competed. It was wrong then, and it should have never happened. And it's imperative with lawsuits like this that we make sure that there's justice being done, because there is real harm, not only on the field of play, which is denying people the opportunity to compete fairly, denying people the opportunity to win something that they've worked for their entire lives, trained for. But there's also the accompanying, dressing rooms, locker rooms, and things like that that just really make women feel insecure and unsafe, and it's inappropriate. And so we're grateful for this lawsuit, grateful that it's being filed here in Georgia, but saddened that it needs to be. This is an indictment on our culture. And we talk about women's sports, groups like Texas Values and other family policy councils all around the country are fighting for legislation to make sure that we end this practice in our states. In Georgia, we have made a rule in our state via the High School Association that sports will be based on biology. We're working on legislation to codify that. We kind of did a backdoor with the ruling to allow that to happen. We worked on a bill this year that would have saved girls' sports and made it past the Senate. It did not get a vote on the House floor. I think it will next year. So we're continuing to work on that front. But we also can't just look at it. I know this is a conversation about women's sports, but we can't look at this as a singular issue. We cannot indulge the fantasy any longer. And so we have to make sure that, you know, from elementary education on up, that we speak truth. You know, you eloquently started this off. Leah Thomas, Will Thomas is a man. You know, regardless of what his name is, regardless of what fantasy it is, we cannot indulge that that fiction anymore. And so we need to make sure that teachers and schools are protected from having to use false pronouns. We need to make sure that we're not indoctrinating kids with sexual indoctrination as they go through schools. And we need to make sure that biological reality is enforced all the way through. And so we're continuing to work on these policy things. It continues to be a very important discussion. Katie, we're very proud that you're from Georgia, and glad that you're speaking out. We were proud to host Riley Gaines and Paula Scanlon for different events last year. And so Katie, being on the Zoom call together now, we're gonna have to have you down for an event to speak for us as well. So you didn't know it, but you're signing up. So we're ready to plug you in. But this is one of the most insane fights that we have, but one of the most important, because this is where, you know, one of the early gifts that God gave to people was biological definition of male and female. The first gift he gave to man was woman. This is the left's ultimate attempt to shake their fist at God. And if we cannot plant our flag and stand for truth in this reality, then, you know, there's really nothing at this point that's worth fighting for. So it's important that we take a stand. It's important that we call out weak politicians that are unwilling to take a stand. And it's also important to point out that this is something that, regardless of what the mainstream media wants you to think, this is where the people are. You know, anytime you do polling, depends on how you ask the question or wherever you or where you're asking the question. But this is about a 70 to 80% issue. There's really only 20 to 30% of Americans that are willing to answer a survey and say, yeah, I think biological males belong in girls' sports. And even some of those 20 to 30% are not convinced of it. They just are so surrounded by woke and progressive friends that they're convincing themselves to say it in a poll. People are with us on this. We need to press our foot on the gas, both legally, policy-wise, but also culturally. And we need to make sure our pastors are speaking to this reality too. So that's why I'm grateful for groups like Texas Values and others that are making sure that we're taking that multi-pronged approach. It's an election issue. It's a policy issue. It's a legal issue. It's a cultural issue. And it's a church issue. So make sure that we continue fighting for it. So Kim, again, I'm so grateful for you. Katie, grateful for you. And really grateful for the work being done at Texas Values.
All right. Thank you so much, Cole. Yes, everything you said, definitely agree. And thank you for sharing up with us today. And we appreciate the work that Georgia is doing and plans to do for this issue. And, you know, for you to have that firsthand experience of seeing what's going on with the lawsuit is very valuable. And we really appreciate the partnership we have with your organization as well.
Thank you. God bless you.
All right, now we will hear from Ken Jones, who is the co-founder of Icons. And Kim will talk a lot about the lawsuit and the background of it. So Kim, who is Icons, the Independent Council on Women's Sports, and how did this lawsuit come about?
Thank you, Mary Elizabeth. So Icons is, like you said, it's a network of female athletes, and it all started because we realized that there really wasn't anywhere for female athletes. I saw the ramifications of the Leah Thomas situation firsthand. My daughter had to compete against Leah in the Ivy League conference for the entirety of that season, and I was appalled at the silencing, the treatment of female athletes, the dismissal of their rights as women, the coercion that they were under to stay silent, the, you know, implied threats. And it was a shocking realization of the place of women in modern day society here. Just not something I could tolerate. I definitely saw, as my daughter was going through this, saw she, both her and her peers kind of shrink in confidence, believe that, oh, you know, someone's going to take care of this and do the right thing. And it became apparent as the season went on that no one in a leadership position had the courage to protect the female athletes and to do the right thing. So over that year, I was on the phone every day with a whole bunch of friends who had played professional sport, were Olympians, parents of really incredible female athletes. And this sort of organic network was growing up around women's sports as they were watching the debacle of Thomas unfold in the public arena and just saying, like, what has happened here? We understood, we had seen or heard stories of Laurel Hubbard competing at the Olympics against women. This was a male athlete robbing a young woman of an opportunity to compete at the Olympics. We had seen what had happened in Connecticut with the runners, but largely the media had been silent on any of the other stories coming out with men competing in women's sports. And Leah Thomas kind of burst that bubble. So we were all connecting with each other, talking, trying to figure out how to address this, what could we do? And we realized pretty quickly that we were going to have to formalize something. So I ran into, during the course of those conversations, a woman named Marcy Smith, who felt as passionately as I did. And the two of us just said, you know what, we're going to start this. We're going to put an organization together, a place for women to turn to get support. And our intention was to build up that network, make sure women had a collective voice, and also to link in the scientists and the lawyers, the athletes, the sports policy experts, get everyone on the same page and find a way to fight back with construction, you know, constructively in the legal system and by advocating with those in charge of policymaking. So does that, that's where it started. And then I guess going from there, we had bringing all those people together. We had to find the women who were willing to speak out. We had to seek the opportunities where the courts could be tested. And we had to find the right lawyers and the right people to back women with the right expertise to win. So it's been a long process. It's been almost exactly 2 years since Leah Thomas took a national championship from women. And letting women slowly build up the courage to speak out about this, to know where to turn to find us, finding the lawyers that had the experts in sports policy and civil rights, understanding how we could file a lawsuit, where this would take place, what were the paths that we could go forward on that would give us the most success, and then putting that all together. I mean, that's an arduous, it was a heavy lift. And we still yet need to find more funding to see this all the way through. So it's, you know, the sources that women had to fight for their civil rights in court really dried up. The ACLU has turned its back on women. The National Women's Law Center has turned its back on women. So it's up to us as a grassroots effort and for all of those individuals out there that have a young woman in their life that they want to see able to compete fairly. It's up to us to find a way to fund these brave women like Katie here and give them a chance to have their voice in court with the right people supporting them.
Absolutely. And you have 16 plaintiffs on the lawsuit. Was it hard to find women who were willing to bring this case to court?
Yes, it was hard. Obviously Riley has been outspoken from the beginning. I don't think she was frightened to do anything, but and there were other women who were already speaking out, but didn't really know, like, we have been told so many times that women can't fight the NCAA. That it's just a body there in a certain place to help orchestrate the things going on for competitions. But they are the governing body. They are the one that puts the rules in place. They're the ones that oversee whether or not things are fair and policies being followed. They have to be able to be held accountable. So it was important for women to be able to find us icons to us for us to help facilitate those connections and for those young women to get together and be able to say, oh yeah, you know, I don't want this to happen to another group of women, and what they did to me was wrong, and I want them to be held accountable for, you know, the trauma that they hoisted on me. So just getting the women together to find each other, to know that there was a place to turn, that's it. That was the biggest effort. There are still a lot of women that reach out to us that would like to be part of the lawsuit, but are intimidated either because of their scholarship or because of the environment they're in. I think something that gets lost in this is that, you know, when a young woman is off at school, away from her family for the first time in her life, you know, is surrounded by individuals that have a lot of power and authority over her, it's a difficult situation to want to put yourself in, to set yourself apart or ostracize yourself from a peer group, to feel like you could get in trouble, to be frightened of retaliation. So I think one of the really important things about this lawsuit was giving women a chance to stand shoulder to shoulder, to realize there were other people willing to do this. But even in that situation, because not all these women are connected to each other, you know, in an immediate environment, it is incredibly courageous and brave to stand up and say, hey, hang on a second, my rights have been violated and I want to hold you accountable for doing that. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I believe Cole touched a little on this, but can you explain why the case was filed, where it was, but also, you know, the timing of the lawsuit, you know, why was it filed last month, and kind of go over a little bit of the background again of, you know, how we got to this point.
Sure. So it was filed in Georgia because that's where the championship took place, Georgia Tech. And that's where the NCAA agreed and worked with the school system in the state of Georgia to host that event where the women's rights were violated. So it's an obvious place for, you know, to file suit. Why wasn't it filed sooner? I mean, I think, well, there are a lot of things. We were caught off guard. I think female athletes as a whole were caught off guard. Everyone was kind of shocked that this was allowed to happen in front of our eyes, that all of a sudden there were men competing for national championships and beating our female Olympians. It was no one thought that this could go unaffected for so long. So I think there was over the course of that year, you know, we saw the NCAA come out with different statements, say we're going to defer to governing bodies coming back and saying, we're going to pass new rules. And then the NCAA coming back and saying, yeah, we're not going to follow those rules. We're going to do our own thing. So there were a lot of moving pieces as the year went on. And then at the conclusion of the event, like I said, you know, I was on the phone with women on a regular basis who were just outstanding female athletes, Olympic gold medalists, you know, national record holders, women who'd won multiple national titles, had just unbelievable accolades, all writing to the NCAA, signing large letters saying, please give us a voice, you know, let us talk to you, let us explain why this is an injustice, please stop perpetuating this insanity in women's sports and give us a level playing field. And the NCAA was not responding and not responding. So over the course of the year following the championship, we put together, our icons had formed, we put together a legal demand letter, basically telling the NCAA, please give us a seat at the table, invite us in for conversation. We want to talk to you. We need to make this right, or we're going to hold you accountable. And nothing happened. We gave them time. There was a change in leadership at the NCAA. The president shifted. And then we spent the next year putting the pieces together to say, like, are there women that want to take this to court? You know, how can we help connect them with the scientists and lawyers and doctors and ethicists and policymakers that we found to give them the best chance? And then, you know, when the women came to us eventually and said, we want to file suit, we want to go forward with this, we're like, okay, we're going to help you do this. We will back you. This is what we organized for. there was a short window, like I believe the statute of limitations in the state of Georgia is 2 years. So the lawsuit, we gave the NCAA, honestly, all the runway they could have. They had all the time in the world to make this right, to fix the policy, to stop it from continuing to affect, you know, athletes that were still competing like Katie here. And they did nothing. So it was, we had to get the suit filed in the time frame that met the statute of limitations, but still gave the NCAA as, you know, we gave them the benefit of the doubt to say they were trying to fix it, trying to invite us to the table, and nothing was happening. So that's why it got filed when it did.
Absolutely. And one last question before we get to our very special guest. Where are we now? In the lawsuit, it was filed in March, but where does it stand and what can we expect from here?
Okay, yeah, good question. We are waiting on the NCAA's response. So there's a time delay when a lawsuit is filed for the party that it was filed against to give a response. They've asked for an extension. I believe that was expected. So we're awaiting their response. Meantime, you know, there's a lot of interesting developments happening from our side. People are reaching out to us, women, policy experts, people wanting to get involved and support it. So there will be, you know, changes to the filing. I don't know exactly what the timeframe for that looks like, but hopefully sometime this summer, the end of the summer, we'll be able to make things more public, or the NCAA will make their position public, what they intend to do. We've, of course, already seen great support from the state of Georgia, with the governor, lieutenant governor, and attorney general all coming out on the side of the plaintiffs. It's kind of a waiting game now, but a lot of things are happening behind the scenes. And this is where a lot of the expenses build up, right? So we've got to have the lawyers getting all the facts straight, getting everything, all the basis for their arguments all lined up, making sure they have the right witnesses. So we personally are busy doing as much fundraising and trying to build up the grassroots support that these women need. So if anyone's listening and is interested in having their daughter or their granddaughter have access to fair competition and a clear understanding of what Title IX is supposed to do for women under the law, please, $5, $500, whatever you can give. We need to give women a fair chance going forward. And you can find out all of the updates on the case and find a way to donate by going to takeonthencaa.com. So it's a one-stop shop for keeping up to date on all of the media and information. We will keep that going as there's progress in the case. Again, it's takeonthencaa.com.
Well, thank you so much for the work that you and ICONS do. It's definitely going to make a difference, and we're very supportive all the way. Now, we are lucky enough to have one of the courageous plaintiffs here today to talk about her role in the lawsuit, Katie Blankenship. Katie, thank you so much for joining us today. You're one of the brave plaintiffs in this case and witness kind of the horrific consequences of what happens when men compete in women's sports. So could you just talk about, you know, what happened to your swim team at the start of this year?
Yeah, of course. Thank you so much for having me. So a little bit of background about me and kind of why I've become a part of this is I'm from Georgia. Personally, I started swimming there when I was about 5 years old. And I wanted to do it competitively, and then throughout high school decided, you know, I wanted to do this, you know, in college. And so that's how I kind of ended up here. And I still love the sport of swimming, but it definitely, that took a hit at the beginning of the year when kind of this all came about. So this swimmer had, been transitioning for my freshman year. I'm currently a sophomore here at Roanoke College. They had been transitioning during my freshman year, and it was kind of unclear about whether or not they were going to compete, or whether or not they were going to compete on the men's team or the women's team. Everything was kind of up in the air until we all came back to school, and we were told that they were going to compete on the women's team as a member of the women's team. And then that's kind of where we all began to sort of question it and come together and gather everybody's thoughts and see where everybody stood on the matter.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a very, you know, important story that people need to hear, and it can happen to any female athlete, and people need to know that. You know, thanks for that background. You know, why do you and your teammates feel strongly about this lawsuit? You know, especially a lawsuit, you know, it takes a lot to join a lawsuit and get out there and sue the NCAA, who's a very big player. Why do you feel like it's so important for you and your teammates to be a part of this?
For us, we want to create long-lasting change. That way, no other female athlete, female team, no other sport, regardless whether it's swimming, track, et cetera, has to go through this, because it's not only happening here, it's happening all across the country in different divisions, in different levels of competition, whether that be high school, collegiate, et cetera. And we just don't want anybody else to have to go through what we did. I mean, it was stressful, it was frustrating, it was just a really hard time. And we want to make some change.
Yeah, so how have you felt since the lawsuit?
I feel a little bit more empowered, honestly, as we are able to kind of make like the start of a change, I guess, and to put our best foot forward and to kind of get the ball rolling, and hopefully finally the NCAA will respond and create change in our direction. That way we can, you know, finally put a stop to this unfairness in women's sports and create permanent policies. That way there's no question about whether like what should happen in the playing field and in sports, and that way there's no really question about it.
Yeah, so have you faced any backlash?
We have a little bit. On social media, mostly people hide behind their screens. And I mean, there's been some nasty comments said, but we were kind of expecting that. But what we weren't really expecting was the support that we got. Many of our friends, faculty, professors, I've had old coaches and old teammates reach out, family members. So I feel like there's been a lot more support rather than backlash, which is very uplifting and empowering and kind of helps us to keep going.
Yeah, that's great. Speaking of support, do you feel like the other plaintiffs in the case support you and give a good amount of support?
Yes, for sure. A lot of the plaintiffs are actually my teammates, so I do see them quite regularly, and we all are kind of keeping each other updated and keep on supporting each other, whether it be different events that we're doing or different just things that we're doing for this. And then the other plaintiffs that I don't know personally that I've either not met or met through social media, like I can feel their support, whether it just be through what they're doing or whether they're reaching out. And I can just tell that we're all supportive in one another in this, and that we all are there for each other, no matter if they're here or somewhere else.
Well, Katie, thank you so much for being brave. First of all, you know, to be a college athlete takes a lot of dedication and a lot of hard work. And so we really appreciate your work. And thank you for sharing with us your experience in fighting back and holding the NCAA accountable. Well, thank you so much for tuning in to our press briefing on the NCAA lawsuit. We're very grateful to have Kim Jones, the founder of ICONS, one of the leading groups in this lawsuit, and to have a plaintiff, Katie Blankenship, swimmer at Roanoke College. And of course, we were happy to partner with our friends at Frontline Policy and their president, Cole Muzio. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you're a part of the media and want to reach out to comment to any of us, you can contact us. But until next time, thank you so much for tuning in.